Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Poor. My guest today is Howie Hawkins. And Howie is going to talk about climate change. Howie was the 2020 Green Party candidate for president. So Howie, boy, that was some undertaking. You must have stories. You know, you probably can write 10 books on it. But you wanted to focus on climate change today. So kind of give us an overview of your candidacy for president on the Green Party line.
Well, one of our central issues was the climate crisis. And we've been advocating a Green New Deal to get us to 100% clean energy and zero and starting to get toward negative carbon emissions within a decade by 2030, because this is what climate science says we've got to do to avoid a climate disaster. And, you know, Trump was calling climate change a hoax, but the Biden administration, well, the Biden campaign's climate program acted as if it was a hoax. I mean, just to give you one example, they didn't put many numbers out there, but they said, we're going to retrofit 5 million buildings in the first 4 years of the administration. Or maybe it was 4 million buildings in the first 5 years. But anyway, you do the numbers because there are 120 million buildings in the country. It'd take them 150 years to retrofit all the buildings in the country for clean energy and energy efficiency. That just tells you they're not serious. They're just not serious. They're for fracking oil and gas and using gas to power our electricity and heat our homes, cook our food, and that's putting carbon in the atmosphere. And then they talk about, well, we're gonna do a carbon capture and sequestration technology, which would require a massive infrastructure. It's dangerous because that carbon leaks out of the underground places where you put it. It's heavier than the regular atmosphere, and it'll suffocate people to death. So, and, you know, it's expensive, so it would raise the cost of energy. Meanwhile, solar and wind costs have gone down so much it's cheaper than everything, except natural gas where you just burn it off right now. Certainly cheaper than nuclear, which the administration is also committed to. So, or the campaign was. And now we've had the first appointments on climate. Cedric Richmond, who represented what they call Cancer Alley between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where they got all those oil refineries and chemical plants and plastics plants, and he's been well-funded by that industry his whole career. And so he's there to kind of sweet-talk the climate movement and hand out some little grants to keep people pacified. And then they brought back John Kerry, you know, who was for the original war for oil in Iraq and has formed, since he got out of the, well, when he was in the administration, the Secretary of State, he pushed fracking worldwide. They called it the Global Shale Gas Initiatives, and it was started under Hillary Clinton. He expanded it to 30 more countries. And then he got out of the administration, and he's part of this thing called the American Security Project, and he formed something called the World War Zero. And the whole approach to climate change is militaristic. We've got to... And they issued a statement when he got appointed the climate envoy, and he's going to be on the National Security Council. We got to put more money in the military to make our bases more resilient, because a lot of them are on the coasts where the sea is rising. We've got to invest in military competition with our great power competitors, Russia and China, which means diverting money that ought to go to clean energy and making this Green New Deal transition to the military. And then finally, we got to go up and compete with Russia in the Arctic Sea, which is, you know, now melting because of ice melt and is a place for oil and gas exploration. The Russians are already doing it. They got two nukes on a barge powering oil and gas exploration. They have seven of those barges planned. So we're going to go up there and compete with them militarily. It's insane. It's not only risking, destruction of the planet from climate change, it's risking nuclear war. So I'm, I'm kind of like upset because, you know, we were trying to raise these issues and they weren't discussed in the presidential campaign. It was all about Trump. It was a referendum on Trump. Trump tweets, everybody responds. They're either outraged or they cheer. And these real issues were not discussed. And now we got another administration that represents the corporate special interests. Not what we need, not what the people need.
You know, one thing you said, which is important when I called you to see if you wanted to do a show, is the progressives and the Democrats place no demands on Biden. All they cared about was getting rid of Trump. Can you explain that a little further?
Yeah, no, all they did was demand that I either drop out or tell people to vote for Biden in the swing states. You know, so progressives weren't even, you know, pushing their own program. Once the establishment of the Democratic Party closed ranks against Bernie Sanders, all the progressive supporters of Bernie Sanders, including Bernie Sanders, just lined up behind Biden. And they had these so-called unity working groups on climate and these other issues that were a total defeat for progressives. What came out of them was all Biden, yet these progressives are calling defeats victories, misleading the people. And so Biden runs as not Trump, really didn't offer people anything they could, you know, no program. What was he the champion of? Except maybe testing and contact tracing toward the end. And he really wasn't even clear about that. I mean, Trump was such an easy target. He could have been beating him up for 6 months on that question. So, you know, and the thing that concerns me is, you know, Biden squeaked by, but because there was not a progressive economic message from the Democrats, a lot of people, middle-class people, working-class people, feel economically insecure. Mostly white people, but now, you know, a fraction of black people and Latino people and Asian people, they went with Trump because I think they bought Trump's lies about he cares about the economy, he can make the economy better, because people are hurting or are anxious about where they might end up, particularly, you know, in the Rust Belt, like here in upstate New York, across all the way across the Midwest to Wisconsin and Minnesota. And people may not have lost factory jobs themselves, but they know people who did. So I think that explains why Trump got so many damn votes. I mean, he got 74 million votes, and they're still counting here in New York. So I think the left, you know, the Democratic Party left, they defeated themselves. And now they're surprised at the appointments Biden is making. Biden don't owe them anything. They just lined up behind him. Whatever he said was all right with them because it wasn't Trump. And he's going to take them for granted. I mean, we're going to see who the domestic appointments are going to be. We know Yellen is going to be the Treasury Secretary, which is, you know, an establishment pick. Certainly, she's not a progressive. She's not a particularly right-winger. She's just an establishment, you know, when she was head of the Fed. But... You know, I don't know who they're going to pick for domestic policy that's going to be progressive, because Biden doesn't have any progressive programs on domestic policy, really. Probably the most progressive thing is that they're going to help with child care. But it's not universal child care. A lot of it depends on tax credits. Well, you got to have income and be paying taxes to get the credit. So we'll see.
What astounds me is the fact that we, as a nation, we're educated. A lot of people have college degrees. Some people have advanced degrees, post-doc and stuff. I can't for the life of me understand why a lot of people who went through college, who should critically think, couldn't critically think as far as this election was concerned. Couldn't they see what Biden stood for and maybe look at the Greens and say that would be the way to go? Why were people so and I hate to use the word, but why were the people so dumb in this election?
Well, we don't have a left, an organized left. I mean, what we call the left are nonprofits where the staff is ultimately hired by, you know, some billionaires, you know, Peter Lewis, George Soros, people like that, Tom Steyer, Mike Bloomberg, when he's, you know, funding liberal stuff. And so they're oriented towards steering people to the Democratic Party. They are not, and they're very top down. You know, the staff gets around, they get hired, and they decide what we're going to do. And then they message us on social media or email. And so we don't have people meeting in their communities, thinking for themselves, strategizing for themselves, and starting with how are they going to take power in their own cities and towns. You know, we have this sort of protest culture, which is basically lobbying. You know, you can have a very militant demonstration, but in the end, if it's a two-party system, you're asking the Democrats to do something, and they usually won't do it. And they don't feel they have to do it because you're not threatening to take votes from them. So we need a party on the left, and it has to be organized at the base. So the Greens, you know, I mean, they, to their credit, they've stuck around for 35 years, and they keep, putting up the fight. But on the other hand, they haven't built a mass-based grassroots organization. I think that's what they got to do now. You know, they got to learn how to, you know, get people to pay dues as members so they got money, and they got to learn how to go out and talk to people door-to-door or phone-to-phone. Outside the usual suspects, you know, the Green sort of people hear about them. They're concerned about an issue, whether it's fracking or a war or affordable housing. And so they get involved in a movement and they hear about the Greens. We got to have a program of going out and talking to everybody, you know, working class people that are not necessarily engaged, but you go out and talk to them, which I have, you know, campaigning door to door. They don't know how to get engaged. I mean, our political culture, Democrats and Republicans don't have local chapters. You know, voting, I mean, politics is voting every once in a while, and all you get is advertisement and this negative advertisement on TV. So people are either alienated or they don't know how to get involved. We got to give them a way to get involved. That's interesting and empowering. Because a lot of people, they don't vote because they don't think it'll make a difference. They feel powerless. And, you know, that's very... And then when you feel powerless, why pay attention to the news? Because it's painful, because you can't do anything about it anyway. So you don't even want to know how bad it is. So I think, you know, we need a mass-based party of the left that actually goes out and talks to people and listens to them and hears what their concerns are and links what their concerns are to the Green platform.
When was the last time that ever happened?
Well, I think the Socialist Party in this country was the last time it ever happened, and that was based on both unions. Back then, it was a lot. The Wobblies were part of that in the early 1900s. And actually, there was a whole Christian socialist wing of the Socialist Party. That was through churches, you know, what we call the Protestant churches, not the evangelicals. That's how the right organizes today. The evangelicals, boy, they punch way above their weight. You know, they have a 90% turnout, and they're, you know, almost 100% for the right-wing Republicans. Now, we don't have that, you know, in the liberal churches these days. But that was part of the institutional base for the old Socialist Party. They also had their ethnic federations because a lot of these people were immigrant workers. So, you know... The Socialist Party movement had, you know, newspapers in all these languages, you know, from Finnish to German to Spanish. So, and then, you know, in their working class neighborhoods, they had all kinds of associations. So, and then they had the regular socialist newspapers coming out in all these different languages. So they had a whole culture at the grassroots. They, you know, the socialist papers. They had the high school sports scores in them. You know, people just picked them up like, you know, just to find out what the sports were. And then they'd read about, you know, the socialist point of view on, you know, local issues or national issues. All that was there. And today our media is so centralized, even on the, you know, the so-called progressive movements. It's a few nonprofits. You get most of your news from a couple news aggregators. You know, like take Common Dreams. You know, a lot of people, you know, get that every day. I get it. But, you know, when they attacked me for running, you know, and so-called spoiling the election, you know, you had a bunch of prominent intellectuals make these statements, and I'd write a response, Common Dreams wouldn't run it. So we were not only excluded by the corporate media, we were excluded by the so-called progressive media, whether it was Common Dreams or Democracy Now or The Nation or you name it. You know, they were just, they didn't want people to know there was a party on the left running too.
What was their rationale?
Well, I just gave what I think it is. They didn't want anybody to know we were out there. Or if they, you know, they'd already said if they're out there, don't vote for them. And they didn't want to hear our argument. You know, I really didn't get a response from any of them. I mean, I had, you know, I had three people working on media, pitching stories for, you know, 2 years. And we got more coverage in the European, Latin American, even African press than we did in the U.S. press. You know, and a big question overseas is, we got green parties in government all over the world. What's wrong with the United States? What's this electoral college? How does that work? I mean, they're just amazed. And then they see this clown Trump is the president, and they wonder, what the hell happened to the United States? So that's what most of those interviews were about. But at least they covered us, you know. The American press did not.
So I know in New York State, Cuomo did a very good job of eliminating the Green Party from the ballot. How many states are you still viable in?
Well, I think we're still viable in New York. It's just going to be hard as hell to get on the ballot. We're on the ballot in about 15 states. That's down from 21 when we started. We're on the ballot for the election in 30 states. And in most of those states, if we'd got enough votes, we could have kept a ballot line for the next election cycle. Now, 30 was down from 45 in 2016, partly because COVID pandemic made it difficult to petition, and partly because the state parties waited for relief from the states they were asking for or waiting for court decisions. Because it was against public health guidelines to petition in that situation. So they got started late when they did have to petition. So we ended up with less ballot lines. Now, the problem in New York is that, I mean, to get 45,000 signatures basically in 5 weeks makes New York the hardest state in the country. I mean, what Cuomo did is what Putin did to the, you know, people who wanted to run for city council against his party in Moscow. They used the ballot access to knock him out. This is the most authoritarian thing you can think of. Running for office is the fullest expression of the First Amendment. Free speech, petitioning the government for redress of grievances, getting your word out in the free press. And, you know, Cuomo and Jay Jacobs, they're boasting about it. I mean, we've had statements since the election. You know, the media narrative was this was about the Working Families Party. But now Cuomo and Jay Jacobs are saying, no, no, no. It wasn't about the Working Families Party or the Conservative Party. It was about these other parties. You know, which is the Green Party. And I really think it was the Green Party because who took 5% of the vote in 2014 when Cuomo was running for governor? It was our Green Party ticket. That's what he really cares about. The Working Families Party always puts them on their ballot line in the general election and even in the primaries except for 2018. So in the end, they're getting him votes. We compete for his votes. And he doesn't want the competition. That's what that was about. He didn't want the competition any more than Putin wants the competition in Moscow.
How is the Green Party doing in other states? But how is the Green Party doing down south?
It's coming up down south because, you know, the Republicans have run those states, but the Democrats are so conservative. And the Democrats, in fact, are afraid of black Democrats. The white Democrats are afraid of black Democrats. That's why, you know, after voter roll purges, a lot of times, you know, and this is true in states like Michigan and Wisconsin, you get, you know, white Democratic secretaries of state and governors, and they don't move to restore the people who were purged from the voter rolls. And I think it's because You know, black Democrats are such a large percentage of the party, and the white Democrats are afraid of the competition, particularly down south. So there's a vacuum there. So we're getting a lot of interest, particularly from, you know, black folks in the south who just feel like nobody's speaking up for their interests. And so there's potential. The party organizations in Florida and North Carolina are pretty good. The rest of the south, they're pretty weak. But we're going to try to help them get stronger. And that's true across the country. You know, some states are pretty well organized. Most states are not well organized, but they got, you know, a core of people that keep plugging away. And then there are a few states where we still got to get something organized.
How long do you think it'll be after January 20th before people see what's happening and realize, hey, this is not what I expected? That's going to happen. How soon after Inauguration Day do you think it will happen?
Well, I think for those paying attention, it's going to happen very quickly. And I think the COVID relief bill is going to be it's going to be crumbs for working people, and there'll be some nice plums for, you know, special interests. And people paying attention to that are going to be pretty upset. And they'll watch the appointments. And then I think it's not so much the people paying attention being upset, it's whether the broader public is informed about that. And that's up to, you know, the social movements, groups like the Green Party, to, you know, tell people what's really going on. So, you know, I don't have a date on it. If there's some kind of crisis where they, particularly a foreign policy crisis, where they, you know, take a very militaristic response, that'll hopefully get people upset. Although, you know, it was Biden in the Obama administration that pushed the idea of drones and special operations instead of ground troops when we intervene militarily. And that's kind of out of sight compared to when a lot of the troops, you know, are deployed. So, you know, we may be very involved overseas and it won't be well reported, or people won't feel the impact because it's not involving, you know, normal, you know, combat troops, or certainly the National Guard that got mobilized for the Iraq occupation.
The mainstream media, you just mentioned Common Dreams a couple of minutes ago. The mainstream media are intelligent enough to know that what the two parties are espousing was a bunch of baloney. Don't they have a conscience?
Well, they also have a class consciousness. I mean, I think you go to the elite papers that sort of set the media agenda, like the New York Times and the Washington Post. Their top leadership is part of the same class of elites that run the government. And some of them rotate in and out of the government. And they are classmates, you know, in elite schools of people that run the big corporations and banks. So that's their mindset. I think, you know, they're socially liberal. And you know, they don't espouse the kind of racism and misogyny that Trump and the Republican right does, but economically they're very conservative. I mean, they call it neoliberalism, which I think people confuse with social liberalism. It's, you know, it's basically market discipline for working people and special favors for special interests, you know, these big corporate interests. And I think, you know, the leadership of the media, you know, I mentioned those two papers, but I think the people that are at the top of the network news, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, they have the same outlook. Fox has been, you know, more oriented toward the Republican right. That was a business decision. Roger Ailes is gone. Murdoch is getting old. Fox finally, you know, started calling out Trump for some of his crazier things, and Trump's very upset with them. So I'm not sure where they're going. There's this, you know, further right media. There's talk of Trump starting his own Trump TV network, and there's OAN and there's right-wing talk radio. I mean, that far-right conspiracy-oriented media is going to be out there too. But I'm talking about the, you know, you ask about, you know, the mainstream media. I think it's a class thing. They speak for the upper levels of the professional managerial class and the ownership class. That's where their mentality is. That's who they see as their peers.
Do you think Trump is going to go away quietly after January 20th?
No. I mean, he's always sought out the media. He's set up this narrative where the election was stolen. He's still saying that. And, you know, he's going to try to get that on his own media network. That's one thing we've heard. He's got this other right-wing media. I hope we're also going to hear about the trials he's involved in. I mean, I will be mad as hell if Letitia James and Cyrus Vance don't follow through on, you know, prosecutions for bank fraud, insurance fraud, tax fraud, money laundering, campaign finance violations. There's so much there that, you know, and they should be able to get the tax records where they can get the tax records now, and to get the bank and insurance records. And I mean, then it's just a matter of you know, showing the discrepancies. Now, he can get smart lawyers who can, you know, muddy up the waters because numbers can confuse juries. But I certainly think he's going to be prosecuted. And if he's not, then we got a whole nother issue with, you know, these Democrats down in New York City not following through on prosecutions. But at this point, there's every indication they will. You know, they've been doing it. They've been promising it. So I think we're going to hear a lot about Trump in the courts and then maybe in prison.
One quick thing before our time is up. A couple of years ago, Zephyr Teachout ran for attorney general. And there was a candidate in the race who I believe was put there to try to stop Zephyr Teachout. Had Zephyr Teachout been elected as attorney general, she would have really been forceful into prosecuting Trump. Would you agree?
Yeah, I the guy you're thinking of is that sort of conservative Democrat down there in the Hudson Valley. I've heard that theory. You know, I don't know if the establishment wanted that. I think Zephyr Teachout would have been, you know, a top priority for her would have been going after Trump. But we'll see what Letitia James does. Hell, if she does drop the ball, I'd try to recruit Zephyr Teachout to run for attorney general as the Green candidate. I don't think she'd do it, but, you know, I'd be mad as hell if Letitia James doesn't follow through on the prosecution of Trump.
Okay, our time is up, but as this the new administration unfolds, I would like to have you back to share your thoughts on it. So you've been listening to Howie Hawkins. He was the Green Party presidential candidate in 2020. I'm Cynthia Poole. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Howie. Have a great day. Thank you, everybody, for listening.